Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here. This is going to be a very special program, but I first want to ask you some questions. How would you feel if every unhealthy sexual inhibition you have suddenly disappeared? Because we all have the potential to be sexually free, to satisfy ourselves and our partners, and even to reach pinnacles of sexual joy. And each of us has that potential, no matter our age or the status of our relationships. And guess what? The secret to realizing it is something we do every day of our lives. And the secret is to talk. Yes, to talk. So my good friend and famous columnist, I mean, April Massini, the numbers alone confirm her popularity on her Ask April advice. So this is AskApril.com. It's interactive, where it's a four advice forum where almost 26,000 questions have been posted and answered. And so April Massini and I'm going to talk on this program, but this time we're going to mix it up. April will interview me. So welcome once again to this program, April Massini.
Thank you. I feel so privileged to have been able to get you to help me with the Ask Men article that I wrote about what really turns women on.
Yeah, please give our listeners a little backstory. That is,
well,
how you interviewed me and so on.
Yeah, well, I became a columnist for Ask Men, which is the number one male portal for male advice. It gets about 15 million unique visitors a month. It's, I think it's in 18 different countries and a bunch of different languages. And anyhow, I was asked to write a column on sex and what really turns women on. And, of course, you're the first person I thought of because you're the best. And I don't know if your listeners know, but I'm not the only one who thought that. Bill Clinton also appointed you to something for a White House conference, didn't he, related to sex?
Yeah, it was a while ago, but... Bill Clinton appointed me as the as a presidential delegate to the White House Conference on Aging, which occurred in 1995, and I was the only delegate to talk about love and sexuality at that conference. Other topics were Alzheimer's and Medicare, and not quite as lively as my topic in my never-to-be-so-humble opinion.
I bet you got everybody's attention.
I hope so. Yes, yes. So, it was a very fine experience, memorable. But I'm so glad you did ask me, April. And you and I have been friends since somewhere around 2001, I think, maybe before that even. And it's been a wonderful relationship. I contributed to one of your books, How to Date Out of Your League, and then we...
You sure did, and that,
yeah.
Guess what topic?
Yes.
I bet no one could ever figure that out. Yes, you offered fantastic advice for the guys, because it was a men's book, and keep it coming between the sheets.
That's
if
right.
If only you could say it.
So you and I have a nice history together, and we're good friends, and we even spent, with my fiancé, Brian, we spent New Year's Eve together in New York City. That was fun.
It sure was, Diana.
Yeah.
I always have a great time with you.
Thank you.
But
it's very mutual. Yes.
Since we're not going to have much time, I want to get right to it, since I get to interview you a little bit this time, and particularly because you just helped me out with this fantastic article that's now live on Ask Men. And the main thing it's about is, what do you think makes a good lover?
Yeah, what do I think makes a good lover? But I just wanted to back up a little bit and reassure the listeners that when I write up the summary of this program after the show, I will put the link there to the Ask Men story.
Oh, fantastic.
So,
that would be really great.
Yeah. So, well, there are a lot of things that make a man a good lover. You know, we talked in the article that you and I collaborated on about different erotic techniques, and they're all terrific, but they don't necessarily make a man a better lover. And I think it's really more about developing an attitude of openness and curiosity, and even a willingness to do some reading and some personal development and some sex education on his own. So a good lover also
needs
to...
You know what's interesting?
Yes, tell me.
You know, I wanted to, not to interrupt you, but you know, it's, when we talk about men being, you know, the best lovers they can be or being great lovers, what do you think about men being preoccupied with the size of their penis? Because so many men get self-conscious, I think, when it comes to having sex because they're so focused on that. And we discussed in the article that only about 25% of women achieve orgasm through intercourse. And I was curious what your thoughts were on that and how that impacts men's ability to be a good lover.
It impacts it greatly because a lot of men are self-conscious, even though, you know, statistics show that the average erect penis is 5.5 inches. And most women will say, you know, that's fine. And there are even some women who say that a really large penis is a little scary for them. If they're performing fellatio, they might gag. If they're having intercourse, it feels like it's going too deep and it's hurting. So there are a lot of women that with too large a penis, they're a little bit upset. And even men with a smaller penis can be very good with intercourse and with cunnilingus. Many of these men with smaller penises don't think that they're some god if they're really well endowed. And instead, they develop great oral sex techniques and do it happily, because a lot of men really get into eating pussy, as the colloquial phrase is. And I can do this on this radio show because, anyway, penis size... Yeah. It is an issue for a lot of men, and there are penis-enhancing surgeries which are bogus, and they actually can not only cost a man a lot of money, but they can even contribute to erectile dysfunction ultimately. They might make a penis look a little larger because they cut ligaments in the flaccid state, but... Men do not try to go for penis-enhancing surgery. That is not a good thing at all. So
what do you do to help get a guy over that kind of complex?
Well, I do mention the statistics that I just mentioned, and that most women just are so happy to have their lovers truly present and... loving them, and you know, there are a bunch of sayings that have to do with this, like it's not the size of the ship but the motion of the ocean. And if a man has good erections, he can have intercourse where he changes it up a little bit, which also can help him last longer, so he can go in and out, and then if he feels like he's about to ejaculate, he can change it to maybe more circular motions, and but it can feel really, really good to a woman and to have a man just be confident about his package and how he's using it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And how do you coach men to get women to want more sex, assuming he's now mastered these things that you've mentioned? But how do you get him
and by the way,
you know,
mastering
to be able to get women to want more
does take some time, the mastering, it takes some practice, like a lot of things, you know, takes some practice. But so,
now, do you coach them in that as well? Do you like? I mean, how do you do that? How do you help a guy become a good lover?
Well,
how does that work?
Sometimes it starts with sex education. I had a client earlier today who's very, very religious and is about in his early 40s, about to get married for the first time to another woman who's also, she's in her mid-30s. And but they're both virgins. So I spent a lot of the session just with sex education because he had very limited sex education.
So they're both virgins and they're in their 40s.
No, he's 42, she's 36.
Wow.
But I only saw him today. This was our first session, and he has not even masturbated. Now, he's an unusual person. But so it often starts with sex education. And so then I will talk about, in terms of coaching, a man to show appreciation, because many relationships die from emotional undernourishment, because both men and women forget to say what they value and appreciate about their partner. So it's really important to speak up. A lot of women, in one way or another, say, make love to me in my ear. You know, I need to hear the compliments. Oh dear, they're going to start to make noise right outside of my window. They're painting the building. All right, let me close the windows. This is showbiz, right? Oh dear.
Maybe they heard what you're talking about. They're trying to listen.
No, they can't hear it. But usually I go down to the fireside lounge when they're doing this, but they just came out. Anyway, we'll. Can you hear it?
No, I hear
good.
You.
Good, excellent. So hopefully we can move on. So, yeah, showing appreciation and paying attention, these are really important features for a man being a good lover. And I'm hoping that perhaps my fiancé, Brian, who contributed to your partner, to my partner, contributed to your article, too, will call in, and he may, and because he has
that would be
lots,
really great.
He has lots of really good ideas about what to do, what makes a really good lover, and one of his points in the Ask Men article was sync up. So we'll wait and see if he calls in. I hope he does. He's a busy man, so he may not. But, you know, in terms of how I coach guys to be a good lover, I also talk about helping your female lover decompress.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because a lot of women need to feel safe and comfortable. And the hypothalamus, the part of that brain, can send out signals when we're ready for sex, and that can take a while. So to help a woman decompress, it can really help if the guy gives the woman a massage. And
I'm very good at that.
Yes, you are. There's Brian.
Oh, is that Brian?
Yes,
that's
and
me.
He
Hi,
is
April.
Very
Oh, fantastic.
Good.
Hi there.
Yes.
I requested you because what you contributed to our piece, Thinking Up, I had never heard before. And I was curious how you came up with that. And Diana said, well, let me have Brian tell you himself.
Sure, sure.
But here you are.
Well, yes. Well, first of all, just I'd like to say it was fun to work with Diana to come up with some of these ideas about what really turns a woman on. And the article turned out really great. And I think
I
encourage
too.
Readers to go to it. It's at askmen.com. It's under the dating section. But anyway, number five is entitled Sync Up. And you mentioned that a skilled lover plugs into a woman's breath and her pelvic thrust to follow her lead and also listens to her vocalizations and match your movements to that rhythm. And that was the idea of the concept that I was, you know, suggesting that Diana include here. And you want to know how I came up with this idea. I think it's just, you know, it's just through practice and, you know, a little common sense, you know. You know, sex is...
Talk about common sense, very well, common, because I've never heard this before.
sort of,
I
you know, well, the...
But I'd never heard it.
Well, the pelvic thrusting is a pretty basic instinct. You know, you even see it in children and, you know, and other mammals as well, you know, so, and it's a rhythmic movement, and it's, you know, and typically it's, you know, coordinated or synchronized with the muscular contractions that accompany orgasm, both in a man and a woman. And so my, you know, simple concept is, for the man, is instead of just barging ahead, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you know, whatever feels good, is to pay attention to how your female partner is responding, and especially with the pelvic thrusting movements, they can even be very subtle, your partner's breath, or, you know, rhythm of breathing, and also vocalizations, whatever she's saying or what kind of sound she's uttering, they're often kind of in the same rhythm and synchrony. And if what a man can do is to coordinate and synchronize his movements, either whether it's thrusting with his penis or using his hands or mouth or whatever to stimulate his partner. If you do that in synchrony, it can really increase the stimulation and the arousal quite dramatically.
I would imagine the connection as well.
I
can attest.
I bet.
Brian is my fiance, and we have a very robust sex life. And I would put it under the heading of being a great intuitive lover, where he is paying attention to my breathing and to my movements, and it certainly is, not to reveal too much, but I'm pretty much an open book in some ways. I don't want to embarrass anybody, especially any family members that I might have listening.
Okay, well then you can just stop right there, Diane.
I know, but I am multi-orgasmic, and so it helps. It helps that Brian does this.
Yeah.
It really.
And another.
Yeah.
And part of this, paying attention to the woman, it's just also that paying attention. And what I think, you know, from my limited experience in reading, and, you know, I think there are many men who just pay attention to their own pleasure when they're having sex with a female partner, and they don't. And it's my saying around this, my motto is, worship your woman and the goddess will reward you. And
yeah.
What I mean by that is, I love that motto.
Yeah.
Is to pay attention to, you know, put your partner's pleasure and comfort and safety as well, always first. And good things will flow from that, and they do. And, you know, so you just get, instead of just being in and out and finishing up, you can just take your time and surf the waves of pleasure and just enjoy it for a much longer time.
I wonder if part of the problem with the men that, you know, don't sync up, as you put it, is that they're so focused on their performance as opposed to being focused on their lover and making her feel good.
That's probably the case, yeah.
They may be insecure or... as we were discussing earlier, focused on their penis size or whatever.
Right.
So they're not in tune with the woman because they're so, you know, caught up in these other issues.
That's probably true.
And I wonder.
So it's just, you know, it's possibly just a simple matter of changing one's focus and just learning and practicing to let go of those, any anxiety around performance or anything else, and just focus on the woman's pleasure.
That's why I often prescribe a sensate focus, touch homework, caressing exercises. There are a lot of titles you can give to it, but basically it's having erotic massage. It's doing erotic massage and taking turns, 15 to 20 to even 30 minutes each. And for the first couple of times, intercourse is off the table. And that allows that allows the couple to explore lots of other touching.
If it's off the table, does that mean it happens on the floor?
Yeah, right. Not exactly, Brian. But it helps. I have a lot of men in my practice, couples, where the guy is really, he's got a lot of performance anxiety, whether it stems from erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation. And so when Dr. Diana prescribes this exercise and says, at least when you're doing this exercise, you may not have intercourse, it's often a relief. Plus, they explore so many other parts of their bodies that they've never explored before. And it's pleasurable.
Interesting. I can see how that would take pressure off, though. Once you tell them that you're not, you know, that you can't have sex or that you probably shouldn't have sex when you're doing this discovery, this new, you know, erotic massage, I can see how that would take pressure off a man immediately.
Yeah, so April, you just did what a lot of my people do, and they use the word sex when they mean intercourse. So one of the things I get my clients to do, because I think of sex as so much more than intercourse, so I train my clients to say the word intercourse. And sometimes that takes a while because so many people are used to saying sex when they mean intercourse.
Right, right.
So I'll jump in with one more thing about this synchronization, and then I have to get going. But another, you know, because it's a rhythmic kind of thing in terms of trying to match rhythms, a good thing to experiment with if you want to focus on this is to use music, background music, and that has the right kind of beat, and that can vary depending on your partner's preferences. And so, and if you, you know, if you can experiment and say, you know, how does this music synchronize with what you would want to, you know, how you would want to move? And typically, you know, sort of the standard is about a beat for about 120 beats a minute. There are many rock and roll songs that are done at this tempo because that's what the music is used for a lot. And so having some good background music that's got a good beat and that's at the right tempo that your partner likes can enhance this synchronization effort.
It's really
well,
true.
Thank you.
And until Brian pointed out to me, I don't know why I never paid attention to this before, but a lot of the songs have a beat, have a rhythm.
Oh, yes.
Very,
it's intentional.
Very sort of... It's simpatico with sexual rhythms. It's amazing. I had never really paid attention that much to the beats, the rhythms. And a lot of them are very sexy.
Are you a musician, Brian?
Say again, April.
Are you a musician?
I do a little bit. I don't play music very often, but yeah, I play the guitar and sing a little bit. But that was earlier era. So, but most people have some kind of musical, ability, not necessarily to make music, but to respond to music.
To appreciate.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, to appreciate it, and that's what this is all about. So maybe you can, if you have a chance, do an addendum to that number 5 on your article, if they're open for that, and talk
there
about
it. There you
music.
Go.
All right.
No, this is fantastic.
Hey, listen, I've got to run. It's wonderful to talk to both of you, and April, I hope to see you sometime soon.
Thank you so much for the tips, Brian.
Okay, yeah, you guys take care. Have a good show.
Thank you, Brian, for calling in.
You're welcome, sweetie.
Wonderful.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So Diana, how long have you and Brian been together?
Well, it's over 5.5 years. And
wow.
It's a wonderful relationship. It's, you know, as you know, and I've revealed this on the show because I'm in my 6th year with Progressive Radio Network. My husband, Charlie, died quite a few years ago, and it was very sudden and unexpected. And he was a good man, and you knew of him, April. I don't think you met him.
Yes.
But
no, I didn't.
But he had a pretty high profile in Honolulu, where we both lived at the time. And so my standards were pretty high. And until
right.
Brian, and using Match.com and eHarmony, but it was through Match.com that I met Brian 2 years after I moved to Seattle 8 years ago. So it's I'm very grateful for having met Brian, and we have quite a remarkable relationship. And, you know, it's our fountain of youth.
So I have a question. You
yes.
guys have been together for 5 years, and you're kind of like newlyweds, having witnessed you firsthand, because
mm-hmm.
You don't keep your hands off each other. But I'm wondering, how do you avoid getting into a rut? I mean, how is it that you guys are like newlyweds after 5 years? What is it that you do to make it, you know, keep it fresh,
yeah.
so to speak?
Well, I'll tell you what we do, but then we'll expand it to other people, because it's a very common question. How do you spice up your sex life? But in our case, we've kept it spicy. So I think one of the things that's really good for couples to do is to engage all of your senses, and that would be smell and hearing and touch and taste and sight. And you can light scented candles, you can play pulsating music, which we just talked about. I think it's important to put fresh sheets on the bed and feed each other sensual foods. You know, I encourage couples, if they have a big enough bathtub, to take a bath together, and to feed each other like nuts or dried fruits, and to pour a bottle of inexpensive champagne. The man can pour it on the woman's breasts, because the cold bubbly feels in great contrast to the hot water. So this is stimulating your senses. Yeah. And watching erotic films, maybe you can describe to each other what you're watching. Wearing sexy lingerie, that's really important, I think. You know, you dress for success. I like to see people dress for sex. And you know, men are very visual, and I wanted to explain sort of the brain part of it. The preoptic area in the hypothalamus is the part of the brain that makes men and women feel turned on. And guess what? This preoptic area of the hypothalamus is 2 times bigger in men, and it contains twice as many cells. So this is a brain explanation about why men are more visual. So women need to dress up for
wait
sex.
Wait a second. Go back again. Explain this to me again. So part of his brain is bigger than women's?
Yeah.
Related to
it's the preoptic area of the hypothalamus. And that
okay.
is the part of the brain that makes men and women feel turned on.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's 2.5 times bigger in guys
than a woman.
Yeah. So
wow.
That really, I think, does explain why men are usually more visual. Although, you know, maybe it's because I've been a sex therapist for 33 years. I've given myself permission, many years ago, to also be more visual and to be more like a man. So I'm also visual. But I think a lot of women have to give themselves permission to do that. And
interesting.
Yeah. So then in going back to stimulating the senses, so the sexy lingerie, yes, we've explained that. Dancing and maybe doing a striptease. I think putting an amber light next to the bed. Amber or pink, they make the skin look really nice.
Those are good tips.
Yeah. You know, going back to Chanel, Coco Chanel, so she was active in the 30s. Oh, I like two of her quotes. First of all, she said, "Women of a certain age should wear pink because it's so flattering to the skin." So you put a pink light bulb in and it flatters the skin. And then the other...
Oh, isn't that interesting?
A little off subject, but the other question she was asked was, where should a woman wear perfume? And, of course, her famous perfume was Chanel No. 5, right? And she said, anywhere she wants to be kissed. To put the perfume.
That's all right.
So those are... So in terms of... spicing up your sexual life, stimulating your senses. I also like to talk about, there are a lot of things. With intercourse and even with outer course, let's start with outer course because outer course is everything but intercourse. And outer course.
Now, I've never heard that before either, that term, outer course.
Yeah. Well, it's that's because you're not in the sex field, because it's been around for a while, and I like it, so it's everything but intercourse. And outer course is really a great option because it particularly helps a woman forget that there's a goal, so they can just enjoy the feelings and the sensations of the ride. And it And then it can get them out of their brains and into their bodies, which is huge for women. Well, and for a number of men, too, but more for women. They need to get out of their heads. And that also helps them reach orgasm, which we may talk about down the line. So, outer course. And then with... intercourse, well, there are lots of things about intercourse, but I think couples that constantly try new things together, new things.
That's where the curiosity comes in, where
you
speak of often.
Yes. And couples who do this report better romantic chemistry and also higher relationship satisfaction than couples who stick to the same routine. And of
how
course,
do you get them to try different things? I mean, do you have a technique that you use that kind of like opens the box so they start thinking about different things? I mean, because this is what you do all the time, and you're very sexual, so it's easy for you. But the average person, probably not as easy.
Probably not. So I use. So I've narrated some videos, and I will loan these to couples. And it's great sex for a lifetime. And I did this through the Sinclair Institute, and we can learn visually. So that can be helpful to look at a video together. I have done bibliotherapy for many, many years. I have a couple of articles in my vast files that go back to 1986. And
what kind of therapy is that, did you say?
It's bibliotherapy. It means giving my clients things, articles to read, either things that I've written
Okay.
or that other people have written. And, for instance, this I'm holding right now in my hands an article on intercourse that comes from Women's Health, April 2012, and it shows little stick figures. Well, not exactly stick figures, but they're not people anyway. So it shows, like, the standard intercourse position missionary and ways to upgrade it. The clitty cat, the knee hugger, the leg press are three, and then there are explanations about each one. And then another standard is the girl on top. And that, and you can do the reverse cowgirl, which got a lot of popularity thanks to porn.
Uh-huh.
Where she sits on top of the man with her butt facing the man, and then she
right.
can stimulate her own clitoris, and that's a good thing. And then girl on top, the catcher, and the easy glider is another one. And then doggy style, we've got the love seat, which... where the partner is sitting on a chair, and the thigh master, and the downward dog, and then spooning.
Wow.
There are lots of ways to upgrade spooning, the tingly twister, the ladle, the open
hose. Oh, my
goodness. Yeah. So, you know, reading can be helpful, and I have so many of my clients that just love it. That I give them articles to read, and it kind of anchors a lot of what we've been talking about.
Wow.
Very
yeah. interesting. And you have them read it together, I would assume. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I do. I have them read it, well, or they read it separately and then maybe underline in different colors what resonates for them and then talk about it before they come back. Because everything I give my clients to read is meant to stimulate discussion. We're back to the talk thing. People have better
right.
sex if they talk. You know, the
and how do you help men get women to want more sex? I mean, are these some of the practices when they go home and they read about it and they come back and then you discuss the highlighted portions and theoretically those are the ones that they're most interested in? Is that how it works?
Well, yes, and just to reiterate what I said before, and Brian came in just when I was about to expand on it. I said that it's good for the guy to give the woman a massage, and
right.
and he is good at it. And you know, it's a turn on for the man to see the woman naked, and his caresses will release the feel good hormone oxytocin in the woman's body, so she can better relax,
and then, that generates desire.
Yeah. And also, you know, we've talked about this along the way, but music and dance and
right.
Also exercise. It increases the production of testosterone in female bodies. And
uh-huh.
women don't have as much testosterone as men do, but it's still very, very important because testosterone gives us a libido and energy and
right.
a sense of well-being.
Right. And what do you find is the biggest cause for lack of desire in women? I mean, if you had to pinpoint one thing, obviously hormonal would be one, but
yeah.
Generally speaking, what would you say?
I would say the hormonal thing is huge because especially as a woman gets a little bit older and she's perimenopausal or menopausal, there's really no one thing, but I'm going to give you some overall things because the woman, usually it's the woman with a lower desire, but it's not always. Occasionally it's the man. But one in three married couples struggles with this gap in sexual desire. And,
oh, interesting.
And
we're one match more than the other?
Yeah, and so mismatched desire uh-huh. is the number one problem discussed in sex therapist offices. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it not only can it be a hormone imbalance, but can be a side effect of medicines. A lot of the SSRIs for depression can sometimes birth control that a woman is on can sap her sexual desire. But then we also have stress, fatigue, depression, grief, negative body right. image. Negative body image is so common among women. It's really important for a man to reassure his lover that he loves her body, even if she's overweight. And if he doesn't mind, he should say, "I like that you're my voluptuous woman." And maybe he grabs onto some of her flesh and says, "I like this." Now, that may not even work because so often negative body image is huge for a woman and she won't believe him. But to have a woman thinking about her thighs or her droopy breasts instead of being in the moment, responding, being excited, it takes her away from being in the moment and being aroused. It'll derail her. And so, negative body image is pretty big for a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
And then there can be other things like unresolved issues from childhood, such as sexual abuse. And but then in relationships, there can be other causes, you know, continuing arguments, feelings of anger between the partners. So I suggest to couples, or even to a guy who's dealing with his woman, coaching him to get his woman to want more sex, that they find solutions to unresolved problems. If relationship issues such as anger or hurt feelings or maybe even depression or poor body image, as I just described, are interfering with her desire for sexual intimacy, you need to talk about it and maybe even get professional help. And I think you put that in the Ask Men.
I did, and it's important to find someone who's really good at it.
Right.
You had some tips on how to find somebody who's legitimate and really qualified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important to make sure that you find somebody who's really good at what they do. Because otherwise, I suspect you can make the problem worse.
No, that's right,
April.
Which is not a
good thing.
So I'll put this in my summary, but if people go to ASECT.org, ASECT stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and you can plug in where you live once you're on the site, and they will come up with ASEC-certified sex therapists. So, yeah, you want to go to a qualified sex therapist. No question about it.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. And how could somebody bring up toys? Let's say you've never used toys in your relationship before, and you're so comfortable talking about sex, but so many people aren't. How can they bring that up?
Well, for a man, and you're mostly speaking to men, and certainly in this AskMen.com, the man needs to shift his opinion about sex toys, if he needs to, from a sex toy being a competitor to a sex toy being a friend. You know, the sex toy...
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. A sex toy can go on and on and on. And so, you know, you can bring in the sex toy when maybe he's worn out. The other thing is that for women that have trouble reaching orgasm, they almost always need a vibrator that goes so much faster, 300 times faster than any human tongue or finger can go. And you know, ideally there should be no shame here. sex toys can really spice things up a lot. And even going to a Babeland store or a Lover's store or whatever together, and you can see they're a female salesperson, and they're very well trained. I've sent even some of my older couples there where they were initially embarrassed, and then they were put at ease once they found that the sales lady was knowledgeable and said, well, let me work with you and see what you really need. Whether for the man, it might be a vibrating cock ring, which will help, if he's an older man, will help him stay erect. If it's a woman, what kind of stimulation she needs on her clitoris, which has 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers. The penis has 4,000. The only purpose for the clitoris is pleasure. So the clitoris, guys out there listening, if you don't know about the clit, learn about the clit, because that's going to generate her orgasms. So sex toys, and you can go online. You know, there are a couple that I really like. Well, more than a couple, but go to we-vibe.com, wevibe.com. And these are quiet vibrators that go at, 6 to 8 different speeds. And you can use the touch, which is good on the clitoris and also the labia. Because under the labia, the outer labia, now we call this the vulva, because a lot of people will call the vulva the outer female genitals, the vagina, but that's not correct. It's the vulva. And then the inside is the vagina. So under those outer lips on the vulva are vestibular bulbs. And a man who's performing oral sex on his lady can lightly munch on her outer labia, and those will stimulate those vestibular bulbs so that she, those bulbs fill up. They're attached to the clitoral system and the clitoral legs underneath, you know, all hidden. And then that can increase her arousal a lot. But so can sex toys like the touch. Or with WeVibe, the Tango, and you can do an attachment over that which stimulates the G-spot. And you did mention the G-spot, didn't you?
I was going to ask you about that. You know, how to teach somebody... even women who are not familiar with their own. I mean, how do you get them comfortable with that? Women who aren't as comfortable, you know, with their sexuality, how do you, I mean, what do you recommend about learning about it and how to stimulate it, et cetera, when you're not very comfortable to begin with? How do
that's
you find
a good, that's a good question, April. You know, with the joke is that the finding the G-spot may require a GPS because they're not so sure where it is. Where is that thing? So the thing about the G-spot is it's usually on the anterior vaginal wall. So that would be, if you're looking at the outside of a woman's body, that would be just below her belly button. So if a woman wants to find her own, I think she needs to masturbate first and get herself aroused, maybe even bring herself to orgasm. And then she needs to squat down, put well-lubricated two fingers, her index and her middle finger, inside her vagina in a come-here motion on the top wall of her vagina, and she should be able to feel her G-spot. It'll start out the size of a dime. It'll grow when it's aroused to the size of a quarter, perhaps. And it'll feel really, really good to her to have that stimulated. It'll even feel better to her with a partner, perhaps. You know, this is not all women.
Right.
So... there can be the G-spot window wiper and that side-to-side touch, and it sets off the nearby nerve endings and creates a spillover effect of pleasure around the G-spot. That can be when he's first giving her oral sex and then maybe putting his fingers inside of her. But the G-spot is pretty amazing. I mean, finally doctors are saying, yes, it's true, and cadavers have been looked at. And
what do you mean cadavers have been looked at?
Well, so a woman dies, and she gives her body to science. And, you know, there was a time when doctors said, oh, no, the G-spot doesn't exist.
Right.
But they do find this erectile tissue inside a woman's vagina. But they've actually gone looking for it
when a woman is dead. They've actually looked to see if they could find it.
Yeah, exactly.
How interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when women get to be... Okay, so there are certain positions that are G-spot friendly, like doggy style. And here again, when a man's penis is too big, this won't work because it won't touch the G-spot. But so doggy style rear vaginal entry, so that can stimulate the G-spot. Also, his fingers can go inside of her vagina on that come here motion, top vaginal wall, while he's sucking on her clitoris. And that can really provide a blended, well, we can call it a G-gasm. And because it's a blended G-spot orgasm and clitoral orgasm, and that can be mind-blowing.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are lots of possibilities here for pleasure, and that's what we all want, don't we? We want more pleasure and ease with sex, you know.
There's something I wanted to, I don't know if you've ever shared this with your audience before, but you brought up something with the Ask Men piece that we did about the 10 index cards that I absolutely loved.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, about fantasies.
That was so creative.
Well, thank you, yes. So let's do talk about that, because if couples shared fantasies, they might really be better off.
This could work for introducing the toys, too, couldn't it? If you're
sure.
paranoid or shy and not comfortable bringing it up, this is a great solution that you came up with for how to introduce these ideas.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
Because,
tell us about...
Okay, so... So I suggest divide 10 index cards between the two of you, and you each write down 5 sexual fantasies. So, all right, so 5 sexual fantasies. And then you put them into 3 piles after you look at your partners. And the 3 piles would be yes, maybe someday, and no, not on your life. So you would save the yes, maybe someday, save the possibilities, and then I suggest that couples choose one to try once a month or so. So then if they try these new things, and some of them may involve a new toy, right, as you suggested,
right?
Then you're going to get dopamine, because dopamine needs novelty, and dopamine is the hormone of arousal. So taking... playing out these fantasies can really, first talking about them and then making it into a game like I just suggested, can really work quite well. So
and you
that,
said make these things a habit.
Yes. Because a habit takes about, any new habit takes about 21 days. So even when Brian was on this program, he talked about practicing. And you got to practice this. It's not going to be integrated right away. So, practice. Practice, practice, practice. Lots of things require practice.
And you said to put sex on the calendar, just like you would your golf lesson or your tennis lesson. And then a lot of people say, well, doesn't that take the romance out of it? And you would argue that it's necessary because you can't overlook that. And it can
it's
also
necessary,
be
necessary, yeah, because of two syndromes that I talk about, the DINS syndrome, which is double income, no sex syndrome, and the TTFS syndrome, which is too tired for sex syndrome. And so people are really busy, and actually sitting down together and putting sex on the calendar. And for my couples that I see, I recommend two date nights a month. They take turns planning the date night, and whoever turn it is to plan it gets to initiate sex. And actually, lots of men wish their female partner would initiate sex more often. In fact, a survey of more than 500 men asked what made a woman a great lover. And you know what made the top of the list? First of all, enthusiasm. And then men wanted the woman to initiate sex more and let them know what they want. And there's our music.
Interesting.
April, I got to close off the show. Thank you so much.
Well, you're a wealth of information, Diana. I love listening to you.
Thank you. It's mutual, April. We'll do this again soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you, April. Bye.
Happy feet. Happy feet.